happy that you've joined us. We have a wonderful guest today. We have such wonderful guests on this show. I'm just so grateful to be doing this every Saturday with all of you. And his name is Michael Levy. He's an author of What is the Point? Invest with a Genius, Ultraviolet Haiku Delights, The Joys of Live Alchemy, and many other books. And I really advise you to take a look at his website at www.pointoflife.com. The reason why I'm advising you to take a look at his website is because he expresses ideas that are out of the box. And we've all heard all sorts of different ideas about manifestation and positive thinking and about how to really turn your spirituality from the inside out and manifest it outwardly. But I really, really like some of your ideas, Michael. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rochelle.
One of the things that I wanted to quote for people, and one of the things that I like to do, Michael, is that I'm always involved in my own process. And one of the quotes from your book, The Joys of Live Alchemy, really got me thinking. And I just want to read this to the audience because I think it's very interesting. Everything relates to nothing. Nothing is relative to everything. When you live as nothing, you have no thing to lose and can turn into anything you wish. And I just think that is so interesting. So can you talk about how you came to that idea?
Well, luckily, I never had the disadvantage of a university education. And I don't say that lightly, because today in many universities, we either lean to the left or they lean to the right. They're politically motivated. And people come out of the places of education with many fixed ideas. And if you go through your life with fixed ideas, as you get older, your focus narrows. And that's why you get many university professors today who are locked in ivory towers, and they analyze things analytically. And when you analyze it analytically, you lose the true meaning of life. Using your intellect as your only means of interpreting life. And you're forgetting about your true spirit. And so much of academia today lives in that mode. Not all. There are some people there who are trying to open that can of worms, if you will. But in the main, that's how things operate. And also in the media today, the people who are anchoring many of the programs, lots of the producers, they've got a political agenda, and they've also got a way of analyzing truth, intellectualizing it. So you start with experts that come on TV, they have an opinion, and over time, those opinions actually become truths, and people believe what they're saying because they're coming from an eminent professor, and how can that person be wrong? So people start to live truth. And over the centuries, this is how we've evolved ourselves as human beings. So much so that the human brain now believes everything it thinks it knows within the capacity of its intellect, and forgets that there's another force in the universe that creates and evolves all things. Now, when we go back in time and we go back to the creation of the universe started from nothing. It was from nothing. There was a large explosion, supposedly nothing. There was a large explosion, gases were formed, ether was formed, and then particles formed from the gases. As they span at very fast speeds, those little particles adhered to each other, and planets were formed. And after probably 14 billion years, Earth was put in a position, exact good distance from the sun, and the same distance from each planet, so that life could be formed on this planet. As life evolved, and ferns were grown, and then animals came along, and the end of that process, human beings appeared. But so much so now, that human beings mistakenly think that they have the power to rule the world. And that's why we have all the pollution and all the things that are going on in the world today. But if we step back and understand everything came supposedly from nothing, that nothingness contained everything we've got today. So there must be something in that nothingness that is contained in our bodies. And indeed, In every cell in our body, we have 7 trillion cells in our body, most of those cells contain nothingness. Yet, within that nothingness is the plan of the way our body works. And each cell attaches to each other cell. And through that magnificent universe that we've got, our temple as a body and mind, we live a human existence on Earth. Now, if we don't take notice and take care of that magnificent temple, then as we get older, we start to get sick and get disease. And all this comes about because we're going back to this intellect again, this way of thinking. Now, you don't have to have a good education just to live with your intellect and your ego. That also comes with ignorance of not knowing who and what you are. So on both sides of the equation, on the seesaw, on the left side, on the right side, we can lose ourselves if we don't keep ourselves centered.
Okay. Now, you've got some really wonderful ideas, and one of them is about nothing, and that's where we're starting from. So how does that correlate to the true meaning of life?
Well, when you're living in a zone of nothingness, when you look at yourself as nothing, what you're doing basically is stepping back from the ego that's been built up since you were born. You came into this world as a baby full of happiness and joy, and you had the love and the joy of your mother and father. But unfortunately, if you didn't have a mother and father that had true wisdom, then they all were also conditioned by their parents and by their past generations. So you probably grew up in some form of religion, which was different to other religions that are around in the world. And those belief systems, although fed by spirit, have their own agenda and their own dogmatic way of looking at life. Again, you're boxing your mind in from an early age by those belief systems. And the word belief has 3 little letters in the middle of it, L-I-E. And every belief system, whatever we believe, and the word believe also has L-I in it, whatever we believe, we have to question whether they are lies, lying to ourselves, or whether the truth lives somewhere else. So as we're growing up, and we're already taken away from the nothingness zone that we came into the earth from, we're growing in intellect, and we're growing in our way of looking at the world. But at the same time, besides intellect, there's another force called intelligence. Now, intelligence is not intellect. Those two things aren't the same. Intelligence feeds intellect. Intellect cannot feed intelligence. Now, if we just go through life with intellect alone, then if somebody's got worries and anxieties and they go to a psychiatrist or psychologist that is only going to treat them with their intellect or a doctor, you cannot douse a fire with a fire. You can't treat light with light. The universe doesn't work that way. What we need is intelligence to feed our intellect continually and to keep reformulating it, because the most brilliant person on earth knows very little. And if we all live personally for another 1 million years on earth, we will still never scratch the surface of what we need to know. And once we start to understand, we know very little, and we can come each day, as we go to sleep each night, we go into a nothingness zone. We go into a sleep zone where our egos and intellects no longer have control. We're now in a zone where our egos have to step aside and allow sleep to come on. Because if we don't sleep, very quickly will our immune system weaken, and we will not survive too long. So we need the sleep, and we need that nothingness zone to rekindle our minds for the next day. Now, this is where meditation comes in, because the word meditation means to think. And actually, most spiritual believers have to think of something while they're meditating. The fact of the matter is, true meditation means nothing, means being in a zone of nothingness. So we need to, and you can never do that if you're thinking of love, of, say, unconditional love and things like that. You can't get into a nothingness zone if your mind's already working on things that you understand. So a lot of the spiritual gurus of today have set patter and set things that they say at these seminars. And if they work so well, why do people come away and say, oh, it's fantastic, yet a week later they're locked in worry and anxiety again? They've not got out of it. So the fact of the matter is, even in spiritual terms, you can't intellectualize the truth. You cannot find the truth in any spiritual book. Yes, you can get ideas from those books, and you can get ideas of how you can manifest your own ideas that come into your brain, but you cannot ever get it from anybody else. It's a personal quest. Every human being has to find that for themselves, and they can only find that by stepping back from what they think they know and going back into that zone of nothingness. So every night on retiring to bed, they can ask a question of what they want to know, then they can forget that question and go into a nice deep sleep. And if they can go into that deep sleep, RAM 4 of sleep, which children get, as we get older we only get RAM 3 or RAM 2, different degrees of sleep. But if you've got a clear mind, you're going to get the childlike sleep. So throughout your life, you have to keep your childlike innocence. You have to keep the six-year-old in your mind at all times. You cannot lose that connection to that childhood of who you were before your ego developed. And at 6 years of age, you're beginning to develop that ego. But if you can keep that childlike innocence and understand that the world that you live in today, you exist for one reason only. And the meaning of life is, you're here to enjoy your life. You're here to live in joy. It's as simple as that. And this isn't a materialistic joy. Joy means, J-O-Y, just obey yourself. Not the ego self, not the intellect self, but the true self that existed before you were born and will exist when your physical form disappears from this mortal coil.
So, if I'm hearing you right, you are saying that in this space of nothing, that it's not necessarily emotionally bereft of emotions, that there are emotions that can come up in this space, and one of them is just incredible joy.
Well, almost right. But another thing that I've done, and I differ from, like you said, my philosophy is so much different to what everybody else is out there. I've divorced the emotions from the feelings. To make it clarity, if you look in a dictionary, emotions and feelings are the same word. And intellectually, people will say they're the same thing. But I've divorced them. It was a marriage made in hell, and they should never have been together in the first place. Emotions in my world contain all the negativity, the worry, the anxiety, the fear, and the anger. Those are all locked into our mind and have evolved over thousands of years, and all illusions. All those depend on our view of a three-dimensional world. And we're far more than this three-dimensional existence. When you go beyond that three-dimensional existence, you then start to find far more dimensions in the world. And that's where the true part of us exists. And that's within our feelings. The feelings are love and joy. Love isn't a possession. Love isn't unconditional love that we talk about. That's just total gobbledygook garbage. There's no such thing as unconditional love in physical form. In physical form, everything has a condition attached to it. No matter which way you look at it, if you're thinking about God, God has a physical attachment to human beings. He created human beings. So he's got a condition attached to that. But when you leave your physical form and go into your true zone of essence, then that love and joy is the identity of who you are. Those are the feelings that you take with you on your eternal journey, because they're not possessions. They're your identity. They're an essence. They're an essence of intelligent energy that creates and evolves all things, and a part of this thing that we call God, this thing that religion calls God. But once you start having a picture of God, you lose that identity, and then you've got to try and work out an identity, who God is, and then you're going to get really muddled up. And once you start thinking of God, you're going to lose your true essence of who you are. That's why in true religion, in true spirit, by the true masters of religion, they spoke from a truth that today has been totally distorted. When Jesus was preaching and giving his sermons, he was talking about true love and true essence and being connected to his maker. But today, religion is more of a money-making machine for people. If you go look in Rome and places like that, you see all the cardinals, very pompous, and the great wealth of the Vatican, where billions of Catholics are starving throughout the world and lots of poverty, that church has got massive wealth. And why would the church want all that wealth? Why wouldn't they want to share that with everybody in the world? Why do they still take money off poor people? It's the poor people who are in need. That should all be spread out. Share your wealth. That's what Jesus preached. He turned the tables on the moneylenders. And the church has become the money people. And the large corporations in America today, they're the money people. Why would a guy who runs a corporation want $1 billion? What would they want to do for? Unless you're a philanthropist. Unless you want to give that money away and spread it around. But that's not what we've got in America today and the Western world. Greed is paramount. And the kids today are growing up with that greed. So we've lost the meaning of life. We've lost that meaning and that true essence of who and what we are. We're here to enjoy our life on earth. And we're here to pass that joy onto other people. So we can all share in that joy and merriment. Why should a bird that we see in our garden be happier than a human being? The bird's got no worries. A little bird brain, that little ball of feather, is happy. And the people are looking at it, are worried about the bank balances, all the other stuff that's going on in the life. So birds has mastered life, where so many human beings have lost the mastery of living an authentic life on earth.
We need to watch more birds.
Absolutely. Watch
in fact,
nature.
I was watching one right before the show. I was watching a mother dove feed her baby dove right out the window. But I wanted to get back to your idea of feelings, which I think is very interesting. So feelings sound like they are their own intelligence, that they have the ability to share the same capacity and connection straight from source.
That's correct. You so, see, the again, the mind and the brain are two separate items.
Mm-hmm.
The brain is the physical part of your mind, which sorts your consciousness is, and which gives you your speech and gives you your five senses. But beyond that, the mind lives also in the brain and in the body, but it also lives outside it. And that's kind of a bridge between your soul. So your mind is another entity that bridges that gap. And your mind has the intelligence fed from the soul, fed from spirit. And that comes into your brain. But if you block it off by your perceptions of life, what we do is we live with perceived perceptions and we lose our observational truths. So everything that we see and we observe, we dismiss it. When you saw the birds being fed and saw that natural nature of the bird,
mm-hmm.
you might get some intelligent guy intellectualizing that and putting a whole new slant on it. And you get many people saying animals and birds don't have souls. That's part of many religions. They seem to think that human beings are closer to God than animals are. This is dogmatic beliefs. And, you know, there's no shifting. Billions of people today. Billions of people believe, and so much so that they believe that human beings are some special species, different from everything else, and only us have the connection to God, and only we should rule this planet. We have the right to kill any animal we want. We have the right to dig up trees whenever we want. We have the right to poison the oceans. All this is erroneous. All this comes from the ego. And ego means E-G-O, ease God out. I believe I was the first with that phrase in the year 2000. And many of the gurus today use that same phrase. So a lot of my works, which are out on the internet and throughout the world, have been actually endorsed by so many of today's gurus and even priests and even pastors on TV actually come out with some of my phrases. And that just endorses for me how powerful my words are, because I don't do any PR, I have no agents, I've got no marketing, and yet I'm being quoted all over the place. And maybe these people want to say it's their own works. Well, that's fair enough, I don't mind them doing that, because my words, and from spirit, is lodged in their brain now. So it's passed along, and I'm very happy that they're using it. So I'm delighted that's happening. But everybody can do the same thing. Everybody can create their ways of looking at the world in their own unique way and express with their talent that they've been born with the intelligence feeding their brain from their mind.
That's absolutely wonderful. I just love what you just said because I just 100% so believe in that.
Wonderful.
Yeah. One of the other things that I want to get back to is people should talk to birds more often because they do have souls and they do connect to people.
Yeah, not only birds, they should speak to trees, they speak to rocks, you can speak to the ocean. It's all got life forms and they'll all give you a message. They won't give you a message in words, but they will tell you what they mean. They've got meaning. They've got intelligence. A tree has got intelligence. You know, a tree's only got 10% different molecules than a human being. That's the only difference in the molecule structure of a tree and the molecule structure of a human being. And the tree has got intelligence. It knows when to open its leaves. It knows when to close the leaves. Flowers have got intelligence. And they've got a voice. Not a voice with vibrations in it. It's a silent voice. Nonetheless, if you're attuned to it, you can listen to what they're saying.
Well, I've never seen an unhappy bird, so that tells me a lot right there.
Right.
So I wanted to get back to love and joy because
okay.
It sounds like it has an intelligence, that feeling, all of its own. And if it does, no, not if, we're going to say it does, and therefore it's connected to the source, then obviously people can manifest from those feelings.
Absolutely. And the best way I can describe it would be with a poem. So
okay.
If you allow me...
yes, please do.
This is from one of my books called Worries Causes Wrinkles. And, it's called The Blissful Silence. And it's also in one of my first books, I think, Enjoy Yourself, It's Later Than You Think. In the silence of my thought-free mind, I leave the pettiness of condition behind. I feel the exaltation of God's kiss. I truly am in a wondrous divine bliss. In my peaceful harmony, I immerse, floating, weightless, throughout the universe. I feel the comfort of a glowing ember in a timeless world, an ecstasy to remember. One on one, God is God in a field of gold. An endless flowing stream, never feeling old. Worth more than all the treasures can bestow, I rise up in an everlasting, eternal glow. In this state of mind, beauty is all I find. This is the cosmos gift for all mankind. It's time to light the sacred torch. Don't be frightened. In silent meditation, you will be enlightened.
That is just so awesome.
Thank you.
That's really beautiful and so true. So people cannot get out of their own experience. And a lot of what you're talking about earlier on in the show about the distractions, about worry, about concerns, is all about getting out of their own experience. So how can people begin to put themselves back into their own experience? Because they think this is real.
Well, absolutely.
You know, worrying about the bills is a real thing.
Well, absolutely. There's no denying that on this third dimensional world that we live in, the daily events and the physical is real in that third dimension.
Right.
I think what Shakespeare said, if you prick me, do not bleed. We are living creatures on a planet. And today, money is something that we need for our security and comfort, for shelter and for food. These are requirements. We need to keep a healthy body, otherwise we can't work, and if we get sick, we now become dependent of the medical profession to try and keep us alive. So, yeah, these are true concerns. But it's a paradox, because the more you worry about it, the more you worry about making a living, the more you worry about your health, the sicker you're going to get, and the poorer you're going to become.
Exactly.
That's the paradox of it.
Right.
So you can. This is why it's important to have a truer understanding of life. Now, if everything I'm saying about spirit and about nothingness is total gobbledygook, and maybe it is, I don't know whether it's right or wrong, because it's maybe you can call it an opinion. It may be wrong and it may be right. But the fact of the matter is, it's worked for me for 61 years. And it's worked in the most magnificent way. I retired from the business world age 46. I left school at 16. And throughout my life, I've never read a worthwhile book. So whatever I've done, and I've stayed healthy throughout that time, I've never needed to see doctors, and I've never needed to take medication. There's always been a guiding force that's led me along that path. Now, what people need to realize for themselves is, question their own beliefs. Question what is happening to their life. If they want to be dogmatic and say everything I'm saying is total stupidity and it's gobbledygook, then question their own beliefs. How are they faring with their belief system? With their belief system, have they got anger and hatred? If they have, then they're not going to be happy. And if they're not going to be happy, when they come to the end of their life on earth, they're going to question, why did that all that worry and anxiety take their health away? And as they're laying in a hospital bed waiting to meet their maker, or if they're an atheist, wherever they're going to go to, as an atheist would think, they will realize at that point, and everybody does, what a wasted existence they've had. History has proven that to be true, no matter who the person is, no matter what beliefs they've had. Before they've left Earth, before they left it, they said, why? Why me? Why have I gone through this turmoil all my life? Why didn't I realize sooner? Now, some people have been in remission, they've had a cancer, and they've realized what took them to that cancer, and out of remission, they've made drastic changes in their life. The secret is, learn it early on in your life. Learn it before you get to that stage. Learn from your own experiences of what's taking you through life. And the yardstick is this. If you're not happy 24 hours a day, then work out what it is in your mind that's making you unhappy and step back from it. Step back from it and analyze it. First, admit that you're hooked on some way of thinking. Maybe it's some kind of foods that you're eating. So analyze the foods. What are the contents of the food that you're eating? Are you eating dairy products that can cause mucus? Are you eating cookies with trans fats? Are you eating stuff that's got high sugar in it? If you're eating sodas, the word soda in Japanese means poison water. Are you drinking stuff that's poisoning your system? Are you drinking alcohol? Do you smoke? If you do, ask yourself, why are you doing it? Now, there's only a small chestnut in your brain called your conscious mind. Are you going to allow 7 trillion cells to be a slave to that small conscious mind? If your heart and lungs could vote, would they elect you as their leader? Your heart and lungs have got a voice just as much as that little conscious brain that you think you've got is leading your body. That's only had an education. That's only had an intellect. Why do you allow that to master the whole of your body? Why allow that to destroy your body? And there is where the devil lives. The devil doesn't really exist in true existence. There's no such thing as a devil. But the devil lives inside the intellect. It's the only place on earth where it does live. And when you turn the word devil around, you get the word lived. So if you really want to live, the other side of live is evil. So if you want to be evil to yourself, you're not living. You do not live. You exist. You survive. You're surviving on earth. And you're not meant to survive. No matter what your circumstances are. Now people will say, oh, it's okay for you. You've done okay. Yeah. But for 19 years of my life, I lived in a corner terrace house. I had no running hot water. My mother died of aggravation from my father who was totally neurotic. And if anybody knew me in those days, we had no money. But if anybody knew me, they'll tell you, I lived in total joy. People call me stupid, and I guess I was. But I laughed and joked with everybody. I tried to make the teachers laugh at school. I couldn't listen to what they were saying. To me, it was total nonsense, history and geography. It didn't mean anything to me. So I tried to make them laugh in the class. And from trying to make them class, I got sent out of the room or got put a dunce's hat on in the corner, or I got the strap. And when they gave me the strap, they gave me 6 of the best, and I would say, one more, please, for good luck. They couldn't, and, I had a bully of a teacher one time. He pulled me out by the ear, and as that teacher went to sit down, I kicked the chair away from him. That was when I was 10 years of age. Impulsive. I didn't know why I did it. I just kicked the chair away instinctively, because the guy was a bully. He hurt my ear. So, a 10-year-old could do that. I was like, I wasn't really mischievous, but I had that cheeky spirit. And you could say it was like trying to put a saddle on a wild stallion. I couldn't be tamed in that way. I never have been able to. I could never adhere to society's erroneousness. I could never be part. I was Jewish, and I've got a Jewish label. But the fact is, I couldn't believe in the religious side of it, where they said you're a good Jew if you do this, and you're a bad Jew if you don't follow these doctrines. I can never believe in that kind of stuff. Never have done. never would do. Even though I was bar mitzvahed at 13 to please my parents, it wasn't something I felt comfortable with. Yes, the doctrines inside it are magnificent. Some of the things in the Bible are fantastic. And if everybody lived by those codes, wonderful. But there's other stuff in there that cause wars. Millions of people have been killed in God's name. Millions of people in the Christian religion have killed each other. Never mind Muslim and Christian killing each other. People in Christianity have killed one another. In Northern Ireland, Christian and Catholics, 14th century, all the wars that went on. Why would anybody kill themselves by the word of somebody who preached love? It doesn't make sense. It means that people have used that intellect erroneously and lived erroneous lives. And why would you anybody want to punish themselves and live that way?
One of the things that I'm thinking about is too is that there are so many people that I'm working with as a channel that really have difficulty with the fear of their own power of connection. And it's such a huge block for some people that I know. It's just tremendous now because they understand that there's a lot of power there. And of course what you're saying is all that power gets reflected out into wars, into all this kind of destructive creativity when it could be turned into some productive creativity. And there's a lot of people that are quite afraid of that, afraid of success, afraid of their own connections, afraid of their power, afraid of being who they are. How would you approach that kind of healing process? Or in that case, it would be emotion process.
Well, the basic thing is this, that as people have been growing up, if they were smiling a lot, they were looked at as something stupid. And if you got a happy smile on your face and you're happy, there's always somebody that wants to get rid of it. And many times in these people's lives, when they've touched success, when they've found that kind of elusive success for certain moments in time, something's come along, and always will do, in all our lives, to knock it away. Something will hide you behind the eight ball. And it's the power of spirit that takes those illusions away and brings you back into focus and makes you start again. If you lost money in the stock market, for instance, then if you've got true spirit, you'll laugh at those losses and you'll start all over again. But many people have been knocked down so many times in their life that now they do fear showing that joy. They do fear coming back into that sphere. And the people who have got the power today in the media, they fear losing that power to spirit. They are hiding behind the intellect. And if they actually gave into it, they'd be much better off. They'd be better off for themselves, better off for their viewing public, but they're frightened to let go of what they've already got because they feel there's power in that. But that power is an illusionary power. It's finite power. And finite power doesn't last. It's not real. The word finite means it doesn't last. And anything that doesn't last can't be real. The only things that can be real are things that are eternal, things that go on forever and ever. And there's nothing in the physical, no matter whether it be Earth itself, the planet Earth will disappear one day. The whole of our universe will disappear one day. Every planet comes and it goes. That's how it's meant to be. You see, life is so beautiful because it's finite. Life is so beautiful in physical form because it's temporary. And unless we understand that it's temporary, unless we understand that you're not going to have your life forever in physical form, you're going to try and protect what you can't protect. Mm-hmm. You're going to try and say, I want to protect this body, and I want to try and protect this ego that I've got from, and trying to defend it. And you're defending this illusion that's finite. And you can't do it. It's going to go. It's going to slip through your fingers like sand through an hourglass. And when it does, you go back to that nothingness. That's your true being. That's the alchemy. That's who you are. Your alchemy. Alchemy comes from no thing. It turns lead into gold. It turns a black and white picture into color. It turns your life around. It turns a broke person into a person with money in his pocket. Whatever you desire is there for you. But you've got to turn it around through alchemy. The joys of live alchemy. And the word live alchemy, when you look at it in a form, and you want to analyze that word, I didn't know how it came about, But Live Alchemy is Michael Levy. It's my word in form. So the word Live Alchemy made me write that book on Live Alchemy, because that word came to me in a dream. Live Alchemy came into my word in a dream. I woke up 4:30 in the morning and just wrote those words down on a piece of paper. Well, I mean, remember, this is a person that's had no education. How would I possibly know that spelled out Michael Levy? Every letter in it is an anagram of my name. How would I ever know that? But when it turned around and I saw it at 4:30 in the morning, I could see my name clearly on it. Somebody wrote it down on a piece of paper. I thought, that's the book I need to write. And there's 37 essays in that book and 20 poems that feed the alchemy of the mind and get your mind working and thinking. It's the same with the other book that I've written, Ultra Haiku Delights. Ultraviolet Haiku Delights. That lights up in your mind. And I'll give you one haiku that everybody can think about, and this will help the meditation process, mm-hmm. and this will help everybody who's listening into the program to start to formulate the mind and how they think. Now, if you live to be a million, you'll never get to the end of the different dimensions within this seven-word haiku. It's got magical potency to it, and it's just seven words. Write it down, anybody that's listening in today. Just write these words down. The first line is the word circle. The second line is the 361 degree. And the third line is the mystic's point. Now, there is something that everybody should meditate on to clear the mind. That's a process that people can do for themselves and can work on to find different meanings within that. Where does the 361 degree exist? Because in a circle, everybody knows there's only 360 degrees. Is it in the metaphysical world or is it in the real world? It's in both. I can tell you now, it's in both worlds. It exists in physics. It exists in our world that we live in today. In mathematical physics, there is a 361 degree that mathematicians have never worked out before. Again, this is something that came to me at 4:30 in the morning, and I didn't know what it was, and it was the very last haiku that I put in the book, and it took a long time for me to even get some inklings of what it means. And all the time, it's developing my mind into different ways and different thoughts. So no matter if you're the most learned person in the world, whatever how your mind operates, however you've been in any monastery and meditated, those seven words will take your mind on so many different journeys, and the joy those will bring to you, because you're starting to realize who and what you are. It's a magnificent... I don't want to give the game away and start giving you ideas about it, but anybody can email me at... my email is mikmikl@aol.com, mikmikl@aol.com. Or you can go to pointoflife.com and email me from there and give me your interpretation, please, of what you think that means. But give it a few days and sleep on it for a few days and see what comes into your mind. It's a great meditative thought.
It is wonderful. I'm just meditating on it.
Okay. Well, it's the first thing that comes to your mind.
Off
top of your head.
The body of the source. The body of me.
Yeah.
The body of me in the source.
Yeah. Where would you think the 361 degree would exist? Within that. Within the circle.
Within the circle?
Mm-hmm.
Infinitely.
Yeah. Very good. Excellent.
Thank you.
That's warp speed.
Hey, I've got a good teacher right here.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But when you actually... And what you'll do as you go through those thought processes... You'll see where it's physically located too. There's a physical location to it in the three-dimensional world that you can actually see. And you can see how it goes out into infinity.
Wow.
But,
the third eye. The crown
chakra. Yeah, fantastic, yes. Absolutely. You're getting that too. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give people a little bit of an idea. It would be unfair to leave you in suspense. And within the circle, if you imagine it as the wheel of life, the circle of life, and the wheel on a bicycle has spokes. So if we put a spoke on a circle and we have 360 degrees, so we have 360 degrees on that circle and each one is a spoke, each one of those spokes is going to go to the center, to the hub. Because no wheel can work without a hub. It has to go depend on the hub for it to work. Because if you haven't got a hub in a wheel, what are you going to fix it to? It isn't going to work. It isn't going to turn round. So everything, all those 360 degrees, depend on that centre hub. And there you're coming towards the mystic point. Because if you stretch that hub and you start to send it light years away from the centre, it's going to take all those spokes with it. So although the circle stays, that's Earth, it stays in its position, all those hubs, all those spokes that live in the centre and attached to the hub are going to slowly start to disappear into infinity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you in that centre.
Ah, that is such a wonderful image. I can feel it as you're talking about it.
Yeah, you can feel it. You can actually feel it. That's the beauty of it, because you can feel it physically.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it. You've got to feel physically before you can get into the metaphysics. You have to get into the physical, true physical being of who you are, in true sense of contentment and joy, and bringing things down to that centered level. And then you can start thinking more clearly. But the big battle everybody's got is this belief system, and all the time it'll be trying like crazy to take you away from that centered position. It's going to feed your mind saying, don't listen to that, don't listen to that, because it wants the power over you. Your ego wants the power. It wants to be the master. It's been there for so long. It knows no different.
And that's what I wanted to touch on that a little bit, because that was really very interesting to me, because you were talking about the knock, like making great stock market choices and then having something come along that knocks you or tries to knock you from your center or about your feelings of joy. What is that?
It's how the universe works. Everything has a negative and it has a positive charge. As the universe was evolving, you had great forces. Positive and negative ions crash against each other to form creation. You can't get the particles unless different gases explode against each other. Now, in our life, in the basic way of looking at things, you get stock market crashes. You get times when everybody loses money. And the great investor is, one of the great investors is George Soros. And George Soros would tell everybody, and still does, all the bad deals he's done. Throughout the year, he tells everybody the bad deals he's done. He never talks about the good deals, because even someone like that recently lost about $400 million on currencies. And so did Warren Buffett, who was worth about $36 billion. But they make bad choices sometimes. But Soros would say, everything's been bad. All the this deal's been bad, and that deal's been bad. So somebody was asking him at the end of the year, he said, well, how have you done, George, at the end of the year? He said, I'm up 81%. So he's talking about all his bad deals, but he's up 81% on the year. Because you have bad deals in life, doesn't mean to say because you lose a few battles, you ain't going to win that war. Because you have a few adversities, if you keep going and you keep travelling on, you're going to win. But it's not a battleground as fighting. It's the fight you have to keep your joy. The more joy that you keep, the more blissfully aware of who you are, the clearer you're going to be to get the money back that the mistakes you made from. And you'll understand that you don't put all your eggs in one basket when you're investing in the stock market. You must diversify. You must have a different approach and a different way of dealing all the time. Nothing's written in stone. If you find you've got four or five good stocks, there's ways of investing in it. That's why I wrote the book, Invest with a Genius. In that, everybody has a genius inside them that they can invest with. So there's a method that I describe in that book of how you buy stocks and how you sell stocks. And you must keep buying and selling continually. And the trick is not to pay a lot of money out in brokerage fees. You've got to find a way of dealing and some honest brokers who don't rip you off on the fills that you get when you're actually dealing. So there's a mythology and way of dealing in the stock market, which is the same as when you would deal with your health or your happiness. It's all connected. It's all the same. Once you start finding the formula of life, all the pieces drop into place. And do we make mistakes? Of course we do. Many times we make the wrong decisions. Many times we analyze things wrongly. But when we analyze it wrongly, we then backtrack and find the right reason. It only happened to me recently. I did something, I lost money on it, and I then, it's just very, very recently, and then I found the answer, why I went wrong, and what the true answer was, and why I was misguided in thinking that way. Because I didn't analyze the whole situation properly before I made my move. Sometimes I acted too quickly, too impetuously. So we have to step back from those moves and analyze them before we do it. But does that mean we're not going to make mistakes? No. Life's about making mistakes. Life's about dropping yourself in it. Life's about adversities. Every day of my life I'm going to find so many adversities. I sent an article to somebody before we came on the air, and he says to me, I disagree entirely, 100% with what you said. So I asked him to explain himself, and he sent me an answer, and he gave me an analytical answer, the reason why I was wrong. And his analytical answer, it was about golf. I'm a golfer, and I was talking about a certain golfer. And he gave me what his opinion was. Well, I gave him what my opinion was, and he's entitled to his opinion. And that's the beauty of life. If we live by those opinions, and this was only an opinion about something, there's an observational truth, and then there's opinions. Sometimes you can give an opinion, and that's just okay. But when you have observational truths, there's no deterring from that. If you understand that your heart doesn't like trans fats, that's an observational truth. Science has proven that to be true, and it clogs your arteries. So this truth that you can live, and then sometimes there's opinions, and many times when you have the observational truths, your opinions, more or less, are as good as those observational truths. You become more expert at explaining yourself. And that's a process that everybody has to go through and find their own genius inside themselves to do that for themselves. And the results will speak for themselves. It can't fail if you hit that center point. Hit the hub. Mm-hmm. Hit the 361 degree. Find that mystic point inside you. Find that point in your mind that can feed your brain, that can feed the rest of your body, and feed your conscious mind continually. Give your ego a day off. Allow it to stop smashing the horses and running at 1,000 miles an hour. Allow it to relax. And you know what? In the end, that ego will thank you. That ego will say, thank you so much for letting me off the hook. Thank you so much for not allowing me to master you any longer. It was a hard task for me. I was feeling tired. I was feeling wimpish. I was feeling weary. But now you've enlightened me. Now that you've shown me the way, thank you. And then you thank your maker for allowing that to happen. We're all in that zone. And there's another way of expressing it. Again, it's in poetic form. If we've got time.
Yes, we just have a couple more minutes.
Okay, well, we'll try and get this one in.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the view of the soul. This is the soul speaking. And this one is called A Merry Old Soul. I suppose you might say I look antiquated, but I don't feel it. Strange is it not? You would think I would be showing my age by now. After all, I have been around for a lot longer than 3 million years. What's that I hear you say? How can that be? How can that not be? For I have nowhere to go. Whilst it's true I persistently change my roles, I still enjoy every one of them, come what may. On the surface, it seems there's a lot of havoc and mayhem in my existence. But it's just that, only on the surface. Many of the characters I play appear to be enduring life, running around like headless chickens, taking things, oh, so seriously, worries and anxieties abound. Moreover, I sense it all, and yet I still love life's bleated charades, the make-believe words, world of deceits and lies. My, my, what pretense. What grievous dis-ease of the mind. I'm glad it's only fabricated illusions. It fashions a variety of shows of drama, venture comedy, not to mention sorrow. No, please don't mention sorrow, I hear you cry. Well, I did mention sorrow, for it all seems so real to the personalities I play. Good game, good game. You see, I have no need of pipe or fiddle of three, for no matter what, I am a merry old soul. For no matter what, no matter, lass. Sorry, but I have to chuckle, for in reality, I will always wander freely. It looks like the end of another innings. Pull up the wickets then and change the rules. I presume I'll have a heavenly rest stop, an episode of doing nothing in my true attire of vacuity. It's all the same to me. It's all so superbly divine. And what a great boss I have. No wages of sin. I must slip into something a little bit more comfortable. I guess it's a time for a cup of spirituality. Bring on the elixir of life. Be a dear and pass the honey.
That was Michael Levy, and he is just wonderful. And thank you so much for being with us. You can reach him through www.pointoflife.com. Please get a hold of his many, many books. And he's also an inspirational speaker, so you may want to book him. I know I would. Thanks to Don Newsome and his brother Doug, who I just love dearly, for providing this hour for you and for myself. As well, it's always a very enlightening experience for me to have wonderful guests on such as you, Michael. So I just appreciate this hour. It's just so much fun for me. So thank you all out there for listening. And next week we're going to have Diana James, who's going to talk about geological changes. And also stay tuned for the Wynn and Don show. Thank you again, and have a wonderful week. Bye-bye now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.